Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
Boo, this is Griffin McElroy.
And this is wonderful.
Yeah, I did a, it's almost Halloween, so I guess I did a boo there as a, maybe I'm being like a spooky, like a scary ghost this time around, of a, like a dead person who's still around but see-through, you know?
Should we agree that next week will be our Halloween episode?
What day is it today? I think next week will probably be our Halloween episode. That'll be the 25th, and we want to get in there before. People don't like Halloween episodes when it comes in after Halloween.
Or maybe we should do Monday the 30th. That might make more sense.
This podcast comes out on Wednesdays.
You're correct.
What happened there?
I don't know what I was thinking.
Were you thinking that this was my brother and me?
Maybe.
Hop aboard. There's room on the broom. Witch's Broom, another spooky Halloween thing. So this is wonderful. It's a podcast where we talk about things that we are into, and we talk about things that you're into, things that we're excited about and enthusiastic about. And I think it's my turn to start.
I believe it is.
And I really am very excited to start with my first thing.
Okay.
Because we haven't done one like this before.
Okay.
My first thing that I'm real into this week and every week of my life for the rest of my life is Rachel's chili.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a lot of people, I think, maybe had that reaction of like, oh, how sweet. Griffin's going to talk about...
I thought we were going to save this kind of stuff for our Valentine's Day episode.
No, I mean, I feel no greater love for you than I do when I eat this good, good chili. A lot of people are going to hear this and say, aw. But I want to be entirely sort of academic about this.
Okay.
I want to be very scientific about this because it's the best fucking chili in the entire universe.
Oh, Griffin.
No, we can't do that time. Scientific. I'm not saying all these things about your just rambunctious chili. It gets in my mouth and it just plays around in there. I'm not talking about this so you boost your spirits up. Although if that happens, I'm psyched about it because okay. I love making you feel... like you are treasured, because you are, because you're a treasure. Your chili is so fucking good, and I'm saying this as somebody who's not always been a chili fan. One time, when I was a little boy, small boy, I went to my nanny's house, and she made me a plate of food, and on that plate was some beans, and I ate the beans, I threw up.
Oh, no.
And from that point, I told myself I was allergic to beans.
Oh, my gosh, this explains so much.
So I just would not eat beans for... ever, which did not afford me many chili-tunities. Mm-hmm. And that was especially heartbreaking because Huntington, where I grew up, had a number of food festivals, yeah. One of which was Chili Fest, where I think it's in August sometime, they like shut down 4th Avenue, and it's just like all these different places come and they have a chili competition.
Can I ask you how old you were when this
like
chili
eight,
thing
like
happened?
7 or 8.
Oh my gosh.
My dad judges the chili competition, which is, for me, hysterical and also sort of a sort of statement about the nature of man and the way that he inevitably harms himself because my daddy's tum-tum is quite bad. But I didn't participate in Chili Fest because I didn't like beans. There's beans all over the damn place. There was a restaurant in Huntington called Chili Willy's, and they had a cup of what they called Texas Red Chili, bean-free. It had like venison in it. It was amazing. Place shut down.
That's
though,
a big
when I
was
in thing
college. With Texas chili is that typically there aren't beans.
There
in
are
it.
No beans in it. My mom made chili growing up, but for me, it always turned into a sort of bean excavation, just a sort of bean collection. I would lay them out in even rows as I would dig them out, and leaving myself with sort of a tomato meat soup. And then you know, what else? I guess I lived in Cincinnati for a while, and Cincinnati, you got a lot going on. Loved living in you. Go Reds. Your chili is basically sort of cinnamon sweet spaghetti sauce, but keep at it. Rachel's chili is like a sweater that you can eat and that you should absolutely eat. It's a sweater you can and should eat. You eat it and there is nothing better on like a slightly cold day. Do they call it chili? Because if you eat it when it's chilly, it feels like you're eating a big sweater that you should be wearing.
You know, that would be adorable if that were the reason. I imagine a lot of it has to do with the ingredients.
Probably.
Which include chili powder.
Oh, that's probably more what it is. Mm. Eating Rachel's hearty-ass chili on a cold day is about the best thing that you can do with your body. I know you're asking me, Griffin, how's the spice? Terrible. Just kidding. Perfect. It's extremely good. You don't want to tuck into a big bowl of this hearty hearty soup mess and then your mouth is burning the whole time? No, because it's work eating a bunch of chili because it's a hearty food. You have to attack that motherfucker, but you can't do it if you're getting your mouth burned the whole time. So Rachel's chili doesn't come at you like that. It comes at you with a good savory flavor with a little bit of spice on the back end that just keeps you coming back for more. It's not soup because chili should not be soup. I've had a lot of chili where my friend's like, I made you chili. And I'm like, oh, I didn't know that we were this close.
Real soupy.
And it's soup with beans.
I know what you mean.
It's a meat bean soup. Get this the fuck out of here. I've also had shit that's just a big pile of beans and meat that's kind of wet. And it's like, you've done it wrong also. Rachel's chili is hearty and savory, but it's also like creamy without cream in it. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. It's luscious. Do you know what I mean? It all melds together into like it's that perfect. It's a good chili's like a plasma almost. It oscillates between the solid and liquid mm-hmm. states, mm-hmm. and that's what you bring to the table.
Can I talk a little bit about what's in it?
I want to know what your secret is okay. to your chili, because every time you make it, it feels very experimental.
Yeah, it's a little different every time,
and I love that because I never know what to expect.
So the recipe is actually based on one that I got off of allrecipes.com. If you Google it, I believe it's called Laura's Slow Cooker Chili.
Rachel's Original Chili. I'm not going to pay attention to anything you say about sourcing this recipe. For me, it came from your heart and your brain. They got together for this hot collaboration.
So thank you, Laura, wherever you may be, for inspiring this dish. Gosh, so you saute the meat.
Fuck yeah.
With some onions.
We had special meat this time that we got from a farmer's market. They were very intense. Don't cook this above 90 degrees Fahrenheit because it has a low fat melting point. We're like, whoa, shit. Calm down. It's ground beef. Mm-hmm. But they were right.
There's some kidney beans, black beans.
What's up? Has it got sauce? The tomato, like, you put a tomato sauce starter in there?
So then, Laura's slow cooker recipe recommends, 2 cans of tomato soup.
Laura.
Yeah. So I use a small can of tomato sauce.
See, that's how you make it your own.
And then here's the other interesting thing. And this is actually a recommendation on the website. So I can't even take credit for this either.
Take credit for it, please.
You use a can of diced tomatoes with some like jalapeno peppers in there.
Oh.
So it's kind of like a can of Rotel, basically.
Yeah, sure. Can't believe you came up with that on your own, baby. Listen, I'm talking about this on the podcast as advertising because I want to... I'm gonna move away from the mic so they can't hear me. I want to start selling your chili.
Oh, okay.
But if you keep we're away from the mic so they can't hear us. Mm-hmm. I want to sell your chili. I want to put you on every jug and vase of this chili. We're going to sell it in vases. And if you say that you got all the recipes and you stole them from an old woman named Laura, who you knocked over at a Walmart and stole her recipe book out of her purse, they're not going to let us trademark it. So just be careful from them. Okay. Let's get back into it.
Okay. And that's honestly about it. Put it in the slow cooker for
all day.
4 to 6 hours.
I think there's I love your chili.
I like to add, sometimes I'll add some red pepper flakes if I'm looking for some spice. Didn't do it this time. Salt, pepper, you know.
Garlic. I love your chili. Because it feels good to eat it with my mouth. But really, like, the excitement.
Oh, and love.
And the love.
And the secret ingredient is love.
When you tell me at like 10 a.m., I'm going to make chili for dinner tonight, I like get excited about the entire day that we're about to have. And that's not a joke. I'm not being like cutesy here. Like, when you say at 10 a.m., like, hey, I think we got that ground beef from the farmer's market, I think I'm going to make chili tonight. I just think, like, one, that's going to be a good dinner and probably a good lunch the following day. Definitely a good lunch the following day if it survives the dinner. But also, the house is going to be filled with the most wonderful, pungent meat stink that is just going to be, like, so good. And it, I don't know, makes it... We're deep in that season game now, and it just feels so, I don't know, it smells so good, and it tastes, and I look forward to it so much.
I don't know that I've ever made chili in the summertime. For me, it is an exclusively fall, winter food.
Only drawback, perfect chili, very profitable. Look for it in your Sam's Clubs. Look for the jug and vase with Rachel's face on it.
Mama Rachel's.
Good chili.
I want some alliteration, though, real bad. But like a ch sound. Like a
Chunky.
Cheerful chili.
Cheerful chunks of chili. And we'll sell them in little, like bags, like they used to sell like school milk in.
Oh, I thought you were going to say like squeeze pouches. Like,
oh, squeeze pouch of chili? I would fucking destroy those. Only drawback. I love this chili. Very profitable.
Okay.
Is that it does give me toots that could shatter a car windshield. It's the only problem. If I'm in the car with all the windows rolled up and then I could do it too. And then just the, sort of the pressure displacement, all the wind glass in my car explodes. Which is problematic when I'm driving a daycare, because then the baby seat mirror explodes and then I can't see our baby while I'm driving anymore. So that's obviously not ideal.
I have heard, and I don't know if it's true, I try to do it, but I have heard that if you rinse off the beans really well, you have less of an issue in that area.
They got fart particles on it. You're suggesting that when the beans grow up out of the ground from the good earth, that they're coated in some sort of fart particle that they picked up.
Well, and I've noticed this too. If you rinse a can of beans, like a lot of like bubbles will come up.
And you're suggesting that's the fart particles that are just coming up off the beans. I gotta be careful here because I gave you guff on the last episode because I thought you were gonna say the names of the different chemicals wrong something. People and people were like, those, wow, Rachel actually crushed it. So like, I'm looking forward to getting mail into our PO box, PO box 66639, Austin, Texas 78766. Just like, yeah, dude, fart particles, they're real. The main matter states are neutron, positron, and fart particles. What was the wrongest thing I just said?
I'm sure we'll hear about it.
Do you want to tell me about your first great thing?
Yeah. And hey, thank you. I didn't write down like anything about Griffin's great sauce in mind, so I'm sorry about that.
It's fine. I ate your chili for dinner last night and lunch today, and I just like, I love eating it, but I also love that like when I know that you're making it, like my whole day is like chili day. It's like a little miniature holiday.
Okay, so I am going to talk about first.
You're gonna say furs, and I was like, whoa, really? Yeah, I've got some nice fox and mink.
So this topic came to me. This is something I realized. Sometimes I'll think of a particular thing I like, and then I'll try and figure out why I like that thing, go a little deeper. And so I was thinking about the show My So-Called Life.
All right.
And I was thinking about how I like it so much.
Okay.
And then I started thinking about what are the things I like about it. And then I realized in general, I think I just like TV shows with narrators.
Okay.
Because I started looking into My So-Called Life.
Yeah.
Which Claire Danes plays Angela Chase. Angela Chase does a lot of narration, very similar to The Wonder Years.
Yeah, Wonder Years is, I think,
which I also love.
The goat. Is there a more famous show with narration than a more iconic narration show than The Wonder Years?
No, but listen to the other shows on this list.
I can think of a few off the top of my head.
Veronica Mars.
Yeah.
Scrubs.
For sure. That was one I was thinking of.
Arrested Development.
Arrested Development's a good one.
And then some of the other shows, probably less exciting to you, but I realized also Sex and the City.
Grey's Anatomy is like Jane all over Virgin, that shit.
Yeah, and Grey's Anatomy. And I realized I like all those shows.
I really like the episodes of Scrubs where the point of view would change when characters would touch each other and then they would be the narrator for a little bit.
See, I honestly have not seen.
Oh, I've seen all of it. I've seen all of it.
But it led me, and maybe we can explore this together. Why do I like that so much?
Well, it's very literary, right? Like if a book is written in first person, then you are essentially getting action and dialogue, but also the narrator's thoughts in from a first person perspective, right? Which is not something that you get usually from television without a narrator. And so it's like, I think it makes you feel a little bit more intimately connected with the character speaking, but also like the world that they are plugged into.
Like in some ways it's kind of a controlling element. It's kind of like the show's directors or writers saying like, we are going to tell you what's really happening here.
Well, that's the inverse. It's like sometimes it is also like we can't, it's not enough for us to deliver sort of the moral message of what this episode's trying to get across in just like the action and the dialogue that is happening. So we're literally going to have the main character of the show tell you, you know, sometimes I think it's more important to lie if it means protecting your friend's feelings. Like, yeah, I know. I just watched you fucking lie to them. Yeah. Like, I get it. You didn't have to come in and then I'm no Superman. Like, thanks, Zach, but I got the message.
Yeah, it adds kind of a comedic element a lot to the show, like especially in the case of shows like Arrested Development and Scrubs, like you mentioned. And it also kind of adds this poignancy a lot, like especially in the Wonder Years, because that's told from Kevin Arnold as an adult. So you get a sense of kind of the significance of what's happening. And yeah, it is, it's very literary too. You know, it's very much like you're being told a story that's being acted out in front of you.
I honestly think my favorite example of this, because it, I don't know. I really liked, How I Met Your Mother, even though it did have an element of like, it was Bob Saget who was doing the narration and Bob Saget did not play the younger version of the character he was doing the voice of, nor would it be like...
Well, it's like Daniel Stern in The Wonder Years.
It is, I guess, but it is also like Josh Radnor, I think is the character's name, who plays Ted on How I Met Your Mother, and old Ted is played by Bob Saget. But Josh Radnor's already sort of an older... Like, he's a dude in like his 20s, 30s. And then Bob Saget is probably in his 50s. He probably just would have been him. Yeah. I don't know why Bob Saget did the voice of old him. Because Bob Saget, when he was younger, I already know what he sounded like. Bob Saget from Full House. Just saying.
Sure.
I guess I need to circle back with Josh in like 15 years and be like, talk for me, dude. You don't sound like Bob Saget. Oh, got you.
Yeah, so I you know, I thought about talking about all of these shows individually, and maybe not.
What's your favorite of all of them?
Oh, man, probably My So-Called Life.
Really? More than Wonder Years?
Yeah, I almost talked about that because the show so uniquely captures kind of the teenage experience. You know, it's like, I don't know if you had a show like that when you were growing up, but for me... The voice for Angela Chase and the words they chose just felt like resonated so strongly with me. And I was just like, it's like finally a show about the teen experience.
Sure.
Where I they're mean, like speaking to
that is me. There isn't one of these that lasts longer than 5 years. Like that it doesn't cover the, there is a the reason that like the teen show market is so like saturated is just because like, once a show's a few years old, it doesn't work for me anymore. Me, yeah. Like an actual teen, like in that shit. These things have a shelf life of no years. And so it's like, and that's why like a lot of the greats get in, do their thing, get out. Mm-hmm. And if they stay a little bit too long, Dawson's Creek, then they start to lose the plot maybe a little bit.
Yeah.
Maybe there's an episode where a character leans over to pick up an ice cream cone they dropped in the car and die in an accident. Maybe there's a little bit of that happens, Dawson's Creek, not to name names, Dawson. But for me, I mean, like, as corny as it sounds, I probably like, the only one I really watched much of was The OC, which, while not a representation of the glamorous lifestyle that I lived, like they talked kind of like how people I knew talked. And that was like my first like sort of experience. I guess it would have been, what else for me? Like Party of Five was on, or probably Dawson's Creek was on while I was.
Well, I was going to ask you if you felt that way about Boy Meets World, because I know you're a big fan. Shit.
Well, yeah, but that was more sort of family friendly sitcom-y. Yeah. I guess the later seasons got a little bit more hard.
Yeah.
But I mean, fuck yeah, probably. I mean, I watched every episode of that a few times because we had the Disney Channel. Don't want to brag, but maybe it is like The OC, you know? We had the Disney Channel.
We did not have the Disney Channel.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the Orange County cuss word, the character said. Do you want to steal me away?
Whoop, 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 whoop.
Now, what's great is I can reverse that, right? And it'll sound like...
And it says, Paul is dead?
Folks, I'm recording this ad by myself because Rachel, she did something totally wild. She hopped on her electric e-bike and she was like, I am out of here. And then she zoomed off. She hit a ramp and flew up in the sky like an E.T. movie and just went so fast that I was like, dang, where'd my wife even go? And she yelled from over the horizon on a bike adventure. And so I have to celebrate that. I have to cheer for her on that. This bike that Rachel got from Electric E-Bike, it is, one, very sleek and stylish. It looks fast because it is. The battery lasts forever. It shows up at your door, ships for free. It's got a quick toolless assembly, and you can even fold it up for easy travel and storage. It is the perfect time of year to have a sweet little bike for yourself to go on your own bike adventures away from your husband. Anyway, go full throttle into spring with Electric E-Bikes, the number one selling e-bikes in the nation. Get your adventure started at electricebikes.com, and please mention that Wonderful sent you in the post-checkout survey. That's electricebikes.com.
Do you want to read the first Jumbotron message? Well, actually, before that, we should mention that Jumbotrons are about to go back on sale, I believe, November 1st.
At 11 a.m. Pacific.
11 a.m. Pacific. So if you want to get a show, a Jumbotron spot on the show, I think they are selling through the first 6 months of 2018. And
I think we're sold out for 2017 at this point.
Yeah, they do sell kind of fast. So if you do want to get a message on the show, make sure that you show up. And you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron for more details. And yeah.
Okay, this message is for Becky. It is from Cassie and Lori. To our favorite female parent, although it's surprising to all of us, The Bachelor has become a delightful part of our lives, so we decided to celebrate you with a shout-out from your favorite podcast. From your best daughter's happy, probably late, Mother's Day. Enjoy your last one before becoming a grandma.
That's a late one.
You're going to be the greatest.
That's a late one. That one outlived the original podcast. But that's okay. We knew this would happen.
This is still your favorite podcast.
Yeah, I hope so. I think it's really only gotten better, despite what those three negative iTunes reviews we've gotten that we just for some reason just can't stop focusing on have said about the podcast. Thank you for listening at any point in history. And if you have stopped, c'est la vie.
Congratulations, Becky. You get to be a mother year-round, so it is always a happy day.
Yeah, for you. Every day should be Mother's Day, is what I'm always saying.
A lot of hot takes.
Everyone I meet, I just say that to them. I got a message for Chris, and it's from Robin, who says, the last year being married to you has been amazing, from having the best wedding ever to spending our honeymoon and now our first anniversary at the happiest places on earth. I'm glad you're my fam, my boo, and my bubs. I am in love with you, and I'm glad we're on this journey together. That was I couldn't not read that like Chris Harrison, which was challenging. Thank you for being the world's most wonderful husband. That's a sweet, sweet message from Robin for Chris. Putting down a lot of stuff there about like best wedding, best husband, and it's
I like Bubs. I like Bubs as a nickname.
Do I get to say?
Oh, no, I don't have to call you that. I'm just saying from afar, I enjoy that.
Can I call other people Bubs? Like I'm Wolverine?
Wolverine?
Hey, Bubs. He calls people Bub or Bubs or Bubby. I think he says Bubby. Hey, Bubby. Stink. And it's the claws sound. They say stink every time.
When I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I was learning about the Jewish faith because of my heritage.
Yeah.
Grandma and Grandpa are Bubby and Zadie.
I like that very, Yiddish. Very much.
Yeah.
I think I learned that from Rugrats, as I learned so many Yiddish turns of phrase. Thank you, Rugrats.
Hey, you, with the headphones. Just between you and me, the Max Fun store just got some of that sweet, sweet new merch in stock. You know, that merch from your favorite Max Fun shows? Could be posters, tote bags, shirts, stickers, patches, aprons. We got it all. Well, we got a lot. Point is, there's some new stuff. Go to maxfunstore.com.
Do you want my second thing?
Yes, please.
My second thing is a board game, and you've played it with me before.
It's not one I made, though, so I guess...
It's a board game Rachel made.
You really spoiled me with that first one.
It's a board game Rachel made called Dog Beach. And the point of it is you have to get all the dogs on your beach. And you do this by drawing development cards. And it's a very complicated game.
You look at the box
and it's got dogs playing on a beach. And it says, by Rachel McElroy.
I don't remember making this game.
But then you open it up and the instruction booklet is like 500 pages. And there's like warlocks with subclasses. And it's like, I just wanted to play Dog Beach. But then all of a sudden you're rolling 15-sided die, which I didn't even know was a shape that was possible. And there's a whole faction system that's incredibly complicated. I don't understand it.
I'm making a very elaborate joke right now, and Rachel doesn't seem to be getting it at all.
I hate playing in Griffin space. I'm Rachel's brain. Nothing makes me happier than watching him squirm in his space alone.
Why
I won't play with him.
Why did you call it Dog Beach?
Why did you call it Dog Beach, the board game you made about dogs playing on a beach, Rachel?
I was so fixated on that, I couldn't even pay attention to all the other good goof work you were doing.
I didn't name it Dog Beach. You called it Dog Beach. So let's move on together and talk about Splendor.
Okay.
Splendor is a very good board game. It is by a company called Space Cowboys. Game came out in 2014. And it's kind of like my favorite type of board game, which is like the kind that is really quick to learn and pick up. But then every time you play it, there's like different there's variety from session to session, and you kind of have to use different strategies and react to sort of the hand that fate dealt you, and sort of to counter these strategies that your opponents are using.
Well, and it's the kind of game too that the very first time you play, like recently we played it with a group of friends, and our friend who was completely new to the game ended up winning her very first time.
Right. So like this idea of like a game that's easy to, what was it? There's that video, the board game Mastermind, where you had to put the pegs in and then the other player would tell you like how many colors you got right and if they're in the right position. I think the tagline for that was easy to learn, difficult to master, or something like that. I'm sure every board game at some point has used that as their tagline. But I really like that. Like Catan is like that. Like Catan's not too hard to learn how to play. And then every time you play it, there are certain random elements where it's like, oh, it's different this time. We like this game Machikoro. That is kind of also a resource gathering game. But Splendor is like my favorite version of that. It falls into a genre called engine building, which is basically this idea of you creating strategies early on in the game to support big, big moves later on, and building like a ladder to help you support those moves. So really quick, basically the basic breakdown is every player on their turn can either sort of collect some gems from a pool. I think you're allowed to take like 3 gems. Or you can purchase a card, which will count as like a permanent gem in your collection, so that whenever you buy something in the future, if it costs like 1 ruby and you have 1 ruby card, then you don't have to spend anything. You just have this permanent thing. The idea is that you try to build basically a bank for yourself where you don't have to spend any money on cards. You can just pick them up for free because you have the cost covered by these permanent gems in your collection. I hope that wasn't too complicated. And then the cards come in different tiers, and the higher ones have victory points on them. And once you collect a certain number, then you win. And so the whole time you are building, you're like racing against your opponents to build these ladders to help you build these big cards by investing in cheap stuff that's going to help you buy more expensive stuff, which is going to help you buy more expensive stuff, and so on and so on. While also everybody else is competing, and maybe somebody else is doing sort of the same ladder that you're doing, and so you are racing to get the card before your opponent
gets it. There's several levels to this game, and I tend to play at a very base level where I play my own game, where I'm just thinking about what I want to do and the points I want to get and how I want to get those points. And then there's kind of the next tier up, which is, I believe, the way Griffin plays most games, where he is trying to figure out what everybody else is doing and play a little defense and try and kind of figure out, okay, if they're going for those cards, then that's how I'm going to play my game so that it prevents them or gets ahead of them.
Four-dimensional chess is what's great about Splendor is, in addition to these sort of two basic moves of either collecting gems to buy stuff or buying stuff, There is a third thing you can do, which is reserving a card, which is like you take it off the table, and it doesn't count as a gem in your collection. But you keep somebody else from buying it until you and you alone can buy it later on. So it kind of takes two turns to do like something that normally takes one. But if you can't afford it right now, but you want to make sure nobody else gets it, or you see somebody's like about to win on this turn, if they buy this card, you snatch it up and you keep them from doing it. And you're kind of constantly choosing, you're constantly like prioritizing different things. Like, I love games like this where you have a starting point and you see what the lay of the land is, and then you try to figure out what your end point is. And so you have your start point and your end point, and the whole game you are just trying to walk this tightrope between those two points and make it work. And I think Splendor is like a really, really brilliant, like infinitely playable version of that. Game takes like 30 minutes to play also, which, hey, board game developers, is the right amount of time that
Can we talk about the packaging?
It's so good. It's so like...
all the little compartments for the cards and the gems
fit just so
they're right. Perfectly sized.
The little gem tokens have some weight behind them, which like when you reach over to pick up some gemstones, it's like, that feels good.
When you put away this game, it is just always very satisfying because everything has a place and it looks like it did when you first bought it.
Yeah. It's wonderful. Super good. I think they just announced an expansion to it in June. I don't know if it's out yet or not, but we've played a lot of Splendor this year. I think it is a brilliant board game. It's more often than not, like if I know my friends are into it and they are over and want to play a board game, it's the one we reach for because we can play it a couple times.
There's no actual board. It's just cards and gems, so you can spread it out anywhere.
And I love board games. I love super complicated board games and stuff, but we don't play those. We have a wrapped copy of Betrayal at House on the Hill just because it's like, it's going to be hard to onboard somebody onto that one. Splendor takes like a minute to teach somebody the rules, and then you can just keep playing. Good job, Space Cowboys. It's a very good game. Go play it if you... it's won like all kinds of awards. If you have not played it, I think it's great.
Quite as good as Dog Beach. But
Dog Beach is...
second. Dog Beach is a game that I made and forgot about and then couldn't remember anything about it until Griffin reminded me. And let me just tell you, those dogs, you want to get all of them on that beach.
Yeah. One time I got close, I was short one terrier. And but then they countered me on the next turn with a ultra cancel.
Well, and terriers are worth a lot of points.
Terriers are worth 100,000 points. And I don't know why the game works that way. It's sort of a golden snitch situation. Mm-hmm. And you just announced there's an expansion pack for Dog Beach coming out. And I was wondering if you could tell us the name of that.
It's called Dog Palapa. Okay. It focuses more on the city building aspect of Dog Beach. And so you start out with palapas, which, as we know from our previous television watching, are very small enclosures on a beach setting.
Yeah.
But you build up from the palapa.
Okay, to like an empire, like a dog empire.
Yeah, to a dog empire.
No bones about it. This is a great game. And so that's the review quote that you can use on the box. I just said it. You can attribute it to me.
Not to be confused with the television show Empire.
Not to be confused, which Rachel did make a board game adaptation of. That was critically acclaimed. It won the boardies. Do you want to tell me about your second thing?
Yes.
This is going to be such a long episode because we spent so much time on talking about Dog Beach, which is, there's a lot to talk about. It's a complicated game.
My second thing is the Lazy Susan. Get ready.
Why that name? I hope the part of this is the etymology of the name it, Lazy Susan.
I was hoping for that too. So the reason I came up with this topic.
You reached for an apple the other day, couldn't quite reach it, but then you spun that helpful friend.
We had a Lazy Susan at my house growing up, which is kind of ridiculous. Same. Because I'm an only child, so it was just me and my parents. There wasn't a lot of passing that needed to be done.
Built-in cabinet Lazy Susan? No. Or like shell, no. Like top of it? Because we had a built-in cabinet Lazy Susan, and that shit was
No, that's
dope.
Incredible.
Yeah, it was so good.
So the Lazy Susan goes all the way back to the 18th century. But from what we can tell, it was not actually called the Lazy Susan back then. And when I say we, I mean other internet experts. It was called a dumbwaiter.
Dumbwaiter's a different thing.
I know. Here's the thing, though. Dumbwaiters used to describe anything that removed the need for waitstaff.
This sucks. This is a bad naming convention. You fucking dumbwaiter. You can't lift something up a tiny... tiny shaft up to my attic? What's wrong with you?
It was not only revolving tabletops like the Lazy Susan, but also the elevators that carried plates of food.
Why can't it just be like efficient Jeremy? Like, oh yeah, it would take a lot of energy for you to stand up and hand me the salt shaker. And so you just spun this little turntable. That's very efficient Jeremy, and not that's lazy Susan, or that's you're being dumb waiter.
So what we think of as the Lazy Susan didn't come around to the 50s and 60s. And before that, the earliest print reference to a Lazy Susan was an ad in a Vanity Fair magazine from 1917, which...
It almost certainly has to be somewhat hateful in the origins of the name, right? Like,
yeah.
Is your...
Get ready, I've got text here.
Oh, no, shoot.
So it was $8.50, and the copy was an impossibly low wage for a good servant, and it refers to Lazy Susan as, quote, the cleverest waitress in the world.
Holy shit, guys.
Yeah.
It's a little disc that you spin around on ball bearings or what have you, or as some sort of spindle. It's not a person, but even if it was, that's a horrible way to talk about them. Now I feel bad for this turntable. I feel like the turntable's being taken advantage of in some way.
So another popularization occurred, as I mentioned, in the 50s, at Chinese food restaurants.
Oh, okay.
So, with the popularization of Chinese food, which happened in San Francisco's Chinatown, there were a new, group of entrepreneurial restaurant owners who took the small amount of space they had been given for these restaurants and used the Lazy Susan as kind of an innovation to get various dishes and sauces to a round the table.
So, I'm into that. Good thinking. Clever stuff.
Yeah.
I just want to take... I love a Lazy Susan. I'm right there with you. Whenever I see one, unless... If it's one of those deals where it is like a fucking gigantic glass disc where if you put any amount of pressure on it, it starts to wobble like it's going to slide off and cut you in half. A thing I think about basically constantly. No thanks. That kind of, I need it to be structurally sound, a structurally sound Lazy Susan, not some flimsy glass on like a tiny, tiny, tiny little spindle. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna put this big bowl of beans on it to poison Griffin because he's allergic later. And then like it falls, it doesn't spin anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I think as a kid, anything that spun at the dinner table was an exciting thing.
Yeah.
But also, it's nice if you want to kind of forgo the formality of saying, excuse me, will you please pass me the ketchup? Because, you know, like I didn't like to... Well, one, I didn't like ketchup
as
a kid.
Talk to your parents when you were eating with... I don't understand.
No, I just, you know, I didn't want to go through the hassle of interrupting someone else's meal to get what I needed. I just wanted to reach for the disc and serve myself.
Helpful disc. I love it. I love a Lazy Susan. We just need a better name for it because I genuinely feel uncomfortable saying Lazy Susan. I want to say like helpful, like food friend. There's like infinite spin pal, dish dancer. Dish dancer is so good.
That's nice.
There's literally anything, but the fuckers in the 50s were like, I want to call something Lazy Susan. That, like, I just hate Susan so much. I'm going to call this dish dancer a Lazy Susan.
I'm coming up with a jingle right now in my head.
For the disc dancer?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Spin me salter, dish dancer. Help me season my...
go. Help me season my what?
Help me season my meal today.
Sort of a minor key funeral dirge version of a disco dancer.
Get me soy sauce and lanolin.
Lanolin is on the table.
I don't know.
What's the final? You had a busy day, didn't you?
That one still works. Um, Yeah. So the Lazy Susan, there's a lot of scuttlebutt on the internet about it starting with Thomas Edison or Thomas Jefferson.
Oh, I don't listen to
any
of that.
And in reference specifically to one of their lazy daughters, but that's not true. Nobody has agreed to that. I looked at some articles from like Smithsonian Magazine and nobody can pull it back to them.
Lanolin is wool wax or wool grease.
Okay.
A wax secreted by the sebaceous glands of wool-bearing animals. I'm curious why that's a
thing. Don't look that up. Look up the lyrics to Tiny Dancer because I thought...
Sheets of linen.
Oh.
He doesn't say sheets of lanolin. Lay me down in waxy lamb sheets. I like to be a sticky boy. What are you saying? Wax me up, my sticky lady.
I always thought it was sheets of lanolin.
Cover me in sheets of wool wax?
I don't know. It doesn't make sense. Now that you... This is another funny... Another funny thing.
Everything Rachel said in the past 10 minutes has been her pretending to do narration for me. So it was me who thought all of these things, like that Elton John was singing about sheets of lanolin
This is a piece of lore in my family. I am notorious for misinterpreting song lyrics. And my mom told me that, you know, that song Zippity Doodah.
Yeah.
Instead of Mr. Bluebird on my shoulder, I used to think it was Mr. Beanbag on my shoulder, which doesn't make any sense.
It's better, though. So, is that it? You want to talk about some submissions from our listeners?
Yes, please.
I'm so glad I fact-checked lanolin, because I wasn't 100% sure I knew what it was. And if I hadn't, we would have gotten a lot of very, very confused.
I was pulling an original Tiny Dancer lyric.
So here's one from Josh G, who says, I've been really digging on the band Wolfpack lately. Have we talked about Wolfpack?
We haven't.
I don't think so. Particularly their bassist, Joe Dart. Look him up if you haven't. He's extremely talented. But the thing that makes me happy about this band is that a lot of their stuff is pretty bass-driven, and the fans know that. During live shows, people get really pumped about Joe and his incredible playing, and as a bassist myself, it's always heartwarming to see a frequently overlooked part of the band get the enthusiasm it deserves. Wolfpack fucking rules. Joe Dart fucking rules.
Griffin has gotten multiple... members of the McElroy family into this band.
Yes, and just anybody on the street. Animal Spirits is extremely good. Back Pockets, very, very good. They have a bunch of really, really good jams. I also love bass. I also didn't appreciate bass in songs until I got Rock Band. And then whenever you're playing Rock Band, you usually want to be playing guitar or drums or singing, and so every time you get stuck on bass, it's like, ugh, bass. It's usually the most boring part of the song. Until you play a song with the freshest fucking bass line, like, let me hit you with this big surprise, You Ought to Know by Alanis Morissette has the freshest fucking bass line ever. I remember the first time I played on Rock Band, I was like, oh, I guess I have to play bass on You Ought to Know. No, it's extremely, extremely good. Next time you listen for that bass line. It's all over the place. Here's one from Madison who says, just wanted to take a moment to talk about theme parks, specifically Harry Potter World, and how crazy it is to me that places like Harry Potter World and other magical theme parks like Disney World are all because a person was sitting there and came up with a world. Everything down to the smallest detail is because J.K. Rowling is a magical genius, and now I and so many of my fellow theme park nerds can enjoy this amazing creativity, and I find that wonderful.
This is where you're announcing the Adventure Zone theme park?
The Adventure Zone's own theme park. I think that would be cool, though, right? It would be pretty cool. I love theme parks, but I had never really thought of it this way. Just like you walk through Harry Potter World, and what if you're J.K. Rowling, you walk through there, and you're like, oh, yeah, all of this shit is here because I thought of it with my fucking brain. What's up?
Yeah, or the Jurassic Park ride.
Yeah.
Like, Michael Crichton.
Yeah, Michael Crichton just having fun with his friends. And I made that up. That's a T-Rex, Michael. I invented him.
Mm-hmm. Or the Garfield ride.
The Garfield ride. Jim Davis goes on that and he's like...
where you shoot down through a pan of lasagna.
Yeah, and you shoot terrorists. Yeah, I don't know why they went in that direction with it. Well, Jim Davis loves his country. Mm-hmm. Hates Mondays. Here's one from Andy who says, I've been so happy watching the new season of The Good Place on NBC. This is a show for many of the same creative minds behind Parks and Recreation, so if you're not watching it, I feel comfortable in saying it's up your alley. It's got Kristen Bell and Ted Danson to start, and a host of others that I wasn't familiar with before this show, but they tell so many great jokes every episode. The Good Place is a very, very good television show.
Yeah.
I bounced off of it the first time I tried to watch it, because the first like four episodes, I was like, okay, I kind of get it. No, it goes some places. And
yeah.
In the second season, it has some of the most like ingenious premises for a television show, where every episode you're like, oh, well, that's the end of the show, right? Like every episode kind of feels like a series finale a little bit. It's very impressive. One last one is from Kyle. This is something y'all might be familiar with around Texas, the Polyphonic Spree. The choral and symphonic rock sounds of this band set my mind right every time I listen to them. Their last album, Yes, It's True, is a great example of a fall album that I think is just wonderful. I also kind of associate them with fall. I'm not entirely sure why.
That's interesting. I think of them as more of a summer band.
They definitely have some summery tones. But yeah, I've been a big fan of Polyphonic Spree for quite some time. They are a Texas... We went to see them once, and it was kind of uncomfortable because Tim DeLauder was very angry at the audience because we didn't know the lyrics to some...
It was Nirvana.
He got angry at both things. it was a strange vibe for the show, but yeah, he did Lithium, and he would like, oh man, it was so rough. I don't want to harsh the vibe, because I do love this band, but he'd be like, I'm so happy, and he'd stick the mic out to the crowd, and people would be like, he's like, really? He got kind of pissed off.
It was a very intimate venue, and it was one of those venues where you get kind of nervous looking directly at anyone in the band.
Because, we were front row center also.
Yeah, you could very easily make eye contact.
Yeah, it was rough. But a great band.
Incredible band.
St. Vincent got her start in that band. I think still plays with them sometimes. You've probably heard Night and Day, which is their Light and Day, I should say, which has been in a bunch of commercials, an episode of Scrubs. This is our Scrubs episode. Yeah. Thank you all for listening to Wonderful. Thank you to Bowen and Augustus for the use of our theme song, Money Won't Pay, which you can find a link to that in the description of this episode. Thanks to Maximum Fun for having us. What are some great Maximum Fun shows that friends can find at MaximumFun.org?
New one, Heat Rocks.
Heat Rocks.
If you like podcasts where people talk about things they're excited about, Heat Rocks is a great opportunity, exclusively about music, but they bring in cool guests to talk about their favorite songs and albums, and it's
a treat.
It's a cool new thing.
If you want to hear other stuff and videos that we do, you can go to macroyshows.com. You can find a purchase link for Dog Beach on there. It's $199. There's so many pieces of big fucking box.
Well, but then you get the commemorative backpack that holds the game and the four commemorative dogs.
Oh, there's dogs in the backpack?
Well, there's large dogs. They're like...
You shouldn't put dogs in a backpack, baby.
They're like life-size dogs that come with the...
Are they alive? Are they real dogs?
No.
No. No to which question? Because I asked you two questions, and depending on which one no is assigned to, it's going to change sort of the mood in the room and the listenership.
They're not real dogs.
Okay.
They're like toy dogs that you might display in your office, let's say.
Cool.
One is the terrier.
Aren't you glad I called it Dog Beach now? We got so much. We're so glad that you called it Dog Beach.
Yeah.
Whatever. The facade is broken.
I'm
Thanks for listening.
Sweat.
Bye.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.
Judge John Hodgman ruled in my favor.
Judge John Hodgman ruled in my friend's favor.
Judge John Hodgman ruled in my favor.
I'm Judge John Hodgman. You're hearing the voices of real litigants, real people who have submitted disputes to my internet court at the Judge John Hodgman podcast. I hear their cases, I ask them questions, they're good ones, and then I tell them who's right and who's wrong.
Thanks to Judge John Hodgman's ruling, my dad has been forced to retire one of the worst dad jokes of all time.
Instead of cutting his own hair with a Flowbee, my husband has his hair cut professionally.
I have to join a community theater group.
And my wife has stopped bringing home wild animals.
It's the Judge John Hodgman podcast. Find it every Wednesday at MaximumFun.org or wherever you download podcasts.
Thanks, Judge John Hodgman.